Sero, and I am your host for today. And my co-host, Dana Lake, will return next week. We are here every Saturday, like I said, from 10 to 11, covering a wide range of topics related to health, wellness, and nutrition. Our show is sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary, located in Bethesda on West Cedar Lane. They are a health and wellness pharmacy that has been in business here in Bethesda for over 40 years. We have a lot of great things to offer there. We have a regular pharmacy, so if you just have regular prescriptions that need to get filled, we have a wonderful group of pharmacists that pay very close attention to your needs. We have a compounding pharmacy that can do custom compounding, so if you have bioidentical hormone prescriptions that you need done, or you want a custom-built vitamin specifically for you, our compounding department can do that. And we also have a huge selection of health and wellness products, vitamins, supplements, herbs, skincare, body care, bath and beauty items, all natural and holistic. We have a herbalist who's there. We have nutritionists. We have other nutritional counselors. Myself, I am there once a week, usually in private consultations with people, but you can always try and catch me or call or schedule a one-on-one consultation when I'm there. If you have any questions about today's radio show, you can also feel free to email me at drpacero@gmail.com. It's drpacero@gmail.com. You can send me any questions that you have. I'm happy to answer any follow-up questions. Getting hold of me via the phone can be somewhat difficult. I also really encourage everyone, if you enjoy today's show, you might enjoy some of the previous shows we have done. We have about a year and a half worth of shows archived. You can go to the Village Green website at www.myvillagegreen.com and download any of the archived shows for free. All right, so today we have an exciting show for you. We're going to be talking about a super hot topic, osteoporosis. I can't tell you how many times I have patients come into my office telling me that they recently had their annual DEXA scan. They were told that they have osteopenia, which is the pre or early form of osteoporosis, and they are wondering what they can do about it. Their doctors aren't necessarily recommending medication yet, but they're feeling like they're going to be getting there soon. And some people have concerns about taking the osteoporosis medications because they do potentially come with some side effects, and not everybody is a great candidate for taking those medications. So today we're going to be talking about some general things about osteoporosis, but really what we're going to be focusing on is we're going to be getting into some very key nutrients, specifically a nutrient called vitamin K, and some of the exciting research that's been coming out on vitamin K in relation to osteoporosis. Also, if we have time, we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about another really popular nutritional supplement that's out on the market these days called resveratrol. And resveratrol is the product or the compound that has been isolated from red wine that seems to be giving people a lot of health benefits. It's had a lot of research done on it. It's had a lot of press recently. A couple years ago, a big study came out about resveratrol helping to extend the life of some animals. We're going to be talking about that research, some of the shortcomings of it, and some of the new research that's out that is helping us to better understand how to give resveratrol to give people the health benefits that they're looking for. So first, I want to cover some stuff about osteoporosis. It is a huge problem in our society right now. As we are having the aging population getting older, more and more people are starting to get diagnosed with osteopenia or osteoporosis. It's more of an issue in women, technically, usually, than it is in men. There are some pretty scary statistics behind it. People who suffer from a hip fracture, someone over the age of 65 who suffers from a hip fracture, 20 to 40% of those people are more likely to die within 6 months after having a hip fracture. So this is a serious issue. What I want to talk about first is some of the risk factors for osteoporosis. Age is a risk factor. Having lower bone density in females is a higher risk factor. That's the information that you get when you have that DEXA scan done that measures what your bone density is. There are some other risk factors that we don't think about, like the strength of your leg muscles. Stronger leg muscles have a lower risk factor for fracture because your body has more stability and you are less likely to suffer from a fall. I want to talk a little bit about the medications that are used for osteoporosis and some of the screening tools that's used. First of all, I think what we're going to talk about today when we're dealing with vitamin K, we're going to be talking about bone density, but I think that as you pick apart the research and you really start to understand what this issue is about, the issue with osteoporosis is not necessarily all about bone density. It is about fracture risk. Now, bone mineral density has a good sensitivity to predict fracture risk, but not always. So let's look at some statistics. DEXA scans, which measure bone mineral density, only predict about 40% of the fractures that occur in women over 65. So there are another 60%, the majority of fractures aren't predicted by the bone mineral density depletions that you see from a DEXA scan. The statistic is even more surprising when you look at men. Only 22% of fractures in men over the age of 65 are predicted by looking at DEXA scans. So there are two important aspects to bone. There's the mineralization aspect, which bone mineral density, which DEXA is looking at. But there's two parts to bone. There's the mineral portion and there's the collagen portion. So DEXA scans don't necessarily measure the integrity of the collagen of the bone. They measure the density of the minerals. Now we know that the more dense the bone minerals are, right, the potentially or theoretically the stronger the bone because there's more bone mineral density. But it's the collagen that really adds the extra piece. So collagen adds the flexibility. It provides the ability of the bone to flex when you fall. If you have a ton of bone mineral density, but not a lot of collagen, you could have this very dense bone, but it could be a brittle bone. The collagen is really what aids and adds in that flexibility so that when you fall, the bone can absorb the stress of the fall and not fracture. And when we talk about vitamin K later in the show, we're going to be talking about some research that really points toward its ability to reduce fracture risk. However, you don't necessarily see dramatic increases in bone mineral density. Yes, it does come up, but it's not necessarily as dramatic as you would expect given the significant reduction in fracture risk. So there is a possibility that vitamin K is not working just to improve the deposition of calcium and other minerals into the bone, but that it's also helping to support collagen and collagen formation in the bone. We know that people taking the anti-resorptive medications, these are the most common medications that are prescribed for osteoporosis. People who are taking them for more than 7 years, there can be a greater risk of other types of fractures. So these are fractures that are related to a very dense bone cracking with a low impact stress. So there was a study that was done where they looked at people coming into the emergency room with these types of fractures. Basically, this is somebody standing around and they go to turn and their femur fractures just from turning or normal stress or from walking or walking down a step. Not a big stress, not a fall, but the bone fractures. And when they look at where the bone fractures, oftentimes it fractures in the area of the bone that is the most dense, that has the most amount of circumference and the most amount of bone density. So what you've done is you've created a huge amount of bone density, but you've created no flexibility in the bone. And this is what can sometimes happen after years, over 6 or 7 years on some of these anti-resorptive drugs. Now, it's not everybody, it's a low percentage of people, but we can see that, you know, I think it's important for everybody to understand what the benefits, potential benefits, and what the potential risks are of taking any type of medication. The medications work. There are two parts to your bone. There are two types of major cells in your bone. There's one type of cell called an osteoclast, which goes around the bone to help break it down. And there's another type of cell called an osteoblast, which goes around and builds bone up. Now, the major medications that we're using work to inhibit the osteoclast, the cells in the bone that break it down. So you're not breaking down bone anymore. You're just basically building it up. The problem with this is that bone is a living structure, and that it's constantly remodeling and adjusting to all the micro stresses that you have on a day-to-day basis. So the osteoclasts serve a very important role in creating a bone structure that is more fluid, that is more reflective of what stressors are on your body at that exact time. So when you inhibit the activity of the osteoclast, yes, you create more bone density, but you create a bone that is not necessarily as strong. So we're going to talk about today in the rest of the show, we're going to talk about some more natural options at supporting bone density. And some of these can be done in place of the medications if you're in a place where you're not a candidate for them yet. And a lot of them can be done in combination with your medications to help support normal bone physiology, even if you're on an anti-resorptive. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to have a special guest on who's going to be sharing some exciting research with us about vitamin K. So this is the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. Don't go anywhere. We will be back in just a minute. And welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living. This is Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for the next hour. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. here on AM 1260, covering a wide range of health and wellness topics. Next week, my co-host, Dana Lake, will be back. So definitely don't miss her show. I know she has an exciting guest, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, on, who's going to be talking about chronic fatigue issues. Remember, you can listen to any previous or old shows by going to www.myvillagegreen.com and clicking on the archive shows. We have a year and a half worth of shows. I think it's over 160 shows, some wonderful topics that you can listen to all for free. So today we're talking about osteoporosis, and we're going to try and cover some other topics in there as well. We're going to be covering a very exciting nutrient called vitamin K, which I've talked about before on the show. In the last segment, I was talking a little bit about some of the basic principles of osteoporosis, how your bones work in your body, and how the major class of drugs, the anti-resorptives, work in aiding increasing bone density. But what I was also talking about is some of the nutrients we're going to cover today, or some of the things we're going to talk about today. It's important to understand that not every aspect of your risk of fracture is associated with bone mineral density, because there are two parts to your bone. There is the mineralization portion and there's the collagen portion. And we can see in some people who have been on these anti-resorptive medications in a small percentage, their bones become very dense, but they also become very brittle because it is not supporting the collagen formation part. And the collagen formation in the bone is what provides your bone with their elasticity, their flexibility, so that if someone does fall or have a trauma, their bone can absorb the stress related to that trauma. And you have a lower fracture risk from that way. Because at the end of the day, osteoporosis is not about how dense your bones are. That doesn't matter. The issue here is avoiding a fracture. Okay. What we also know about the anti-resorptive drugs is that basically they very much 73% of fractures are non-vertebral fractures. So this is going to be a hip, most likely a hip fracture. the anti-resorptive drugs are known to be most effective in the vertebral area, in the spinal column. Now, that's a major area that you need to avoid fractures, but these drugs aren't as good at avoiding or preventing the risk of fracture in the hips, which is probably the biggest risk factor. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, 20 to 40% of people over the age of 65 who have a hip fracture usually die within 6 months of that fracture, which is a very, very scary statistic. I also want to talk to about one other medication that is related to osteoporosis, and this is not a drug to prevent osteoporosis. This is actually a medication used for very commonly acid reflux. These are going to be the PPIs, the proton pump inhibitors, and the H2 blockers. These are the medications like Protonix and Nexium that people use to heal ulcers and to prevent acid reflux. Now, we have heard a lot in the press recently about getting to hear more in the press about some of these medications and their effect on bone density, because they suppress the ability of your stomach to produce HCl, hydrochloric acid. People with chronic acid reflux oftentimes get irritated from the acid their stomach produces. So if you suppress it, they have a reduction in their symptoms. The issue here is that your body needs hydrochloric acid to absorb calcium. Calcium is one of the minerals that does not get absorbed unless it is put in your body and interacts with something that is very acidic. So your body needs that extremely acidic pH of the stomach to be able to absorb calcium. You start blocking the output of HCl, you start reducing your body's ability to absorb calcium. And this is not just theoretical. Some studies have shown almost a 60%, 59% increased risk of fracture after taking one of these types of medications for more than 4 years. So when these medications were originally hit the market, they are designed for a very limited use. If you read the indications on them, they are designed to be used for short periods of time to allow the body to heal an ulcer or to allow the body to heal from any type of gastrointestinal inflammation. But many people, because they have chronic acid reflux, end up being on these medications for very long periods of time. And if you've been on one for over 4 years and are having issues with bone density, then you need to think about other things you should be doing to be able to get off these medications and control your acid reflux. You need to come into the store. You need to call up a holistic medical doctor, a naturopathic doctor, a nutritionist. You need to talk about nutrition ideas, the right kind of herbs and supplements, because dealing with acid reflux is usually not a hard thing to do. And when you approach it naturally, it's just understanding what the right things to do are. And, you know, being off of these medications is very important for supporting bone density in both men and women. Okay, so now we're going to start talking specifically about vitamin K. My guest for the show is Brian Tanzer. Following his undergraduate studies in biology and chemistry at St. John's University in New York, Brian went on to earn a master's degree in nutritional science from Brooklyn College of the City University, New York. Immediately following graduation, he began teaching undergraduate and graduate nutrition courses in the Department of Health and Nutritional Sciences at Brooklyn College. Brian is currently the technical support manager for Reliance Private Label Supplements. He responds to technical inquiries, develops and designs product literature, publishes articles for magazines and newsletters, provides technical support and training to sales reps and doctors, and is a member of the product development team. So Brian's going to be talking to us today about a new vitamin K product that their company has put out that I think reflects a lot of the good research and could be a good strategy for people who are looking to use this exciting vitamin to support bone density. So Brian, thanks for being on the show today.
Good morning, Dr. Passera. Nice to be here today with you and your audience.
Yeah, so...
Talk about some very interesting products, some very interesting research, and I'd like to get right to it, if you don't mind.
No, definitely.
If you have any specific questions that you'd like to start off with, or if I could just kind of take your listeners through just a little bit of a background on vitamin K, because some people really, it's not one of those so-called sexy nutrients that are out there, like vitamin C, vitamin E, and D. You don't really hear a lot of information.
Well, I think that's going to change. I honestly think that in the next 4 to 5 years, we're going to see as much exciting research on vitamin K that we've seen in the last 5 years about vitamin D, because of the implications with vitamin K and osteoporosis. And also, which we're going to talk about today, what I haven't even mentioned, is the implications of vitamin K related to heart disease.
Exactly, yep. Right. But just to go back a little bit in time, where they got the name vitamin K from, if you look back in some of the nutritional sciences literature, even dating back to the 20s, the vitamin K was actually discovered in about 1929. A Danish scientist named Dr. Henrik Dam and some of his colleagues, they were actually investigating the role of dietary cholesterol by feeding chickens a diet without fat, completely fat. So being that vitamin K is actually a fat-soluble vitamin, similar to vitamins A, D, and E, obviously these animals would have become deficient in vitamin K. So after several weeks, the animals started to suffer from frequent bleedings. And as we know, vitamin K, one of its main functions is its role in blood clotting, what we call blood coagulation. So these scientists at the time postulated that together with fat, there just had to be another compound in the diet which prevented the bleedings. And after years of research, they found a factor in hemp seed which actually prevented the bleeding, and they actually decided to call it the coagulation vitamin. And being that they were Danish researchers, they designated it in German. Instead of spelling coagulations with a C, they used the first letter K. So they designated it, calling it the coagulations vitamin, and that's where the term vitamin K actually has actually came from.
Yep, we definitely all know
it. Interesting history.
Yeah, most people know it does have a very significant role in blood clotting, especially people who are ever been on anticoagulant drugs know that they need to avoid vitamin K pretty strictly.
Right, and we're going to get into that, and we're going to talk about how some of the negative effects of taking those anticoagulation vitamins and causing a deficiency in vitamin K, and it actually ending up in some studies that I'll talk about, increasing the risk for a hardening of the arteries, or what we call calcification of arteries or atherosclerosis.
So we have a couple minutes before the next break. Brian, tell us a little bit about vitamin K's role specifically with bone density.
Well, when it comes to bone density...
Or bone health, I should say, because as you heard, I did spend a good amount of the beginning part of the show talking about it's not just about bone density that we're worried about when it comes
right.
to fracture risk.
Exactly. Well, the thing about the role that vitamin K, specifically, there's different forms of vitamin K that I think we should just mention briefly. There's vitamin K1, which is called phylloquinone, which we find in green leafy vegetables. And then there's vitamin K2, and there are different forms of K2. Most of the good research is on a compound called MK7. And that seems to have more beneficial effects than vitamin K1. But vitamin K2, according to the studies, is able to activate, okay, a specific protein involved in bone formation. And that protein is called osteocalcin. And how it does that is that it causes the osteocalcin to kind of be turned on or activated, producing a specific electrical charge on that protein. And as we know, calcium has a positive charge. So calcium is attracted by charge to this osteocalcin protein. And this osteocalcin protein helps maintain the density of bones, or helps keep calcium where it belongs, and that's within bone tissue
mm-hmm.
and out of the arteries.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the most important factors when it comes to bone density.
Right, and so just to clarify, K1 is found in leafy green vegetables, and K1 is more associated with the clotting cascade,
exactly.
even though K2 does play some roles in it. Vitamin K2, if you're out there after you hear the show, or if you have to get out of your car right now and you can't listen to the rest of it, if you end up somewhere looking for a vitamin to help with your bone density, you want to make sure it is a vitamin K2, not a vitamin K1. Brian, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick up the conversation. We're going to talk about some of the differences between the two types of vitamin K and some really exciting research that we've seen on how it does support the reduction of fracture risk. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by The Village Green. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We will be back in just a minute. Hello and welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for the next hour. My co-host Dana Lake will return next week. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m., covering a wide range of topics related to health, wellness, and nutrition. Just remember, you can always listen or download archive shows at www.myvillagegreen.com, all for free. Today, we're talking about osteoporosis, and specifically, we've been talking about vitamin K. My guest, Brian Tanzer, is on the phone with us explaining to us some more details about the differences between vitamin K1 and vitamin K2, which we explained in the last segment. And now I think we're going to be getting into some of the specifics of the different types of vitamin K2 and which ones seem to be more correlated with supporting bone health in general. So, Brian, thanks for being on the show. Sure. And why don't we just go ahead and pick up where we left off at the last segment, talking about some of the differences between the vitamin K2s.
Yeah. The thing about vitamin K1, is, as we mentioned before, it's important for blood coagulation, but there's a lot more research on vitamin K2 when it comes to protecting bones and also, as we'll get to later on, cardiovascular support. But as far as what the research shows and differences in efficacy, when it comes to bone density, we have to just go into a little bit about how much better absorbed and how much more active and how long MK7, the one specific form of vitamin K2, is in the body. And looking through the studies and looking through the data, it shows that you need much higher amounts of K1 to actually have the same effect on protecting bones than you do of MK7.
So is that the difference between K1 and MK7, or are the two different types of K2?
The two different types of MK2.
Okay.
MK4, you'll see in several supplements, is more of the synthetic form. You may see it called on the bottles of the vitamins. It may be called menatotrinone, and then you'll know it's a synthetic form. It's not, it absorbs pretty quickly, but it disappears from the circulation after about 8 hours, whereas the MK7 can accumulate in the bloodstream and remain in the body for over 72 hours. So obviously, the amount of time that the MK7 spends in the body is going to have a much greater effect on bone density and the other biochemical effects of vitamin K. So the studies do show that MK7 is much better absorbed, faster absorbed, better retained, and for a longer period of time. So you get much greater benefit from the MK7 of vitamin K2 than from the synthetic MK4 that some companies are currently selling. Also to note is that you need much lower amounts of the MK7. The studies say safely that people, even that are taking anticoagulation medication, which doctors tell them, do not eat any foods with vitamin K, such as green leafy vegetables. Just totally take vitamin K out of your diet. And according to the most recent research, that is not a very good recommendation. We really need to replenish some of that vitamin K, but not in a very high amount. And with MK7, the vitamin K2 form of MK7, all you require is about 45 micrograms. Micrograms, not milligrams. Micrograms is a much, much smaller amount than milligrams to maintain those benefits, to reduce the, as we'll get into later, the negative cardiovascular effects of consuming these anticoagulant medications.
Great. Well, I always tell, always advise patients of mine who are on anticoagulants who have been told not to eat any leafy greens. A lot of times what we end up doing is I recommend that they work with their doctor to produce a steady intake of the leafy greens and adjust the medication around that in coordination with their doctor. So at least they're not getting a diet devoid of the natural vitamin Ks or devoid of the fiber and other nutrients that come from vegetables, but you can adjust the dose around that, which is always interesting. So what we're saying, we know that with vitamin K2 in the form of MK7, for people out there who are on an anticoagulant medication, are we saying that it's okay for them to take that with their anticoagulant drug?
According to the research, yes, and absolutely support that, but I would stay within the number that was found in the studies to be most effective and didn't have any negative effects on the effect of the coagulation on the anticoagulant medication,
mm-hmm.
and that's at 45 micrograms, where if you're talking about other forms of K2 and even K1, which some supplement companies do use, you need much higher amounts, sometimes in the thousands of milligram range,
mm-hmm.
and then you may run into a little bit of trouble there.
All right. Well, anticoagulant therapy is a really tricky therapy. Out of all of the medications out there that people are on, it is one of the most difficult to regulate and control and keep within what's called its therapeutic window. And with anticoagulant medications, there's not a lot of room for error. Too much of it can cause problems with bleeds. Too little of it can lead to a formation of a clot, which can be absolutely devastating, whether it be to a heart attack, pulmonary embolism, or stroke. So these medications are very difficult to manage. I would suggest talking to your doctor about any changes you're going to make in your vitamin or supplement routine if you're taking one of these medications, just to be on the safe side. Because as I've said, out of all medications that people are on, anticoagulants are probably one of the most difficult ones to regulate. So it's always a good idea to have an open dialogue with your doctor before you start anything new. So let's talk about some of the research behind vitamin K2 in the MK7 form and what it's doing to our bones. I mean, what kind of research do we have as far as changing bone mineral density, reducing fracture risk? I mean, where's the evidence behind this nutrient?
Yeah, there are several studies. Looking at a couple now. One of the leading researchers in the field of vitamin K is a Dr. Leon Sugars, who's at the Vitamin K Institute at the Maastricht University in the Netherlands, and Dr. Cees Vermeer. They're widely published in this area, and they've done several studies. And the studies have shown that vitamin K2, for example, can improve bone strength and density in women who are very high risk, and that's postmenopausal women, who, you know, once they pass menopause, they're not producing estrogen anymore, and that increases their risk for osteoporosis due to loss of bone density.
Right.
The vitamin K2 has been shown in a couple of different very good clinical human studies to help improve bone strength and bone density in this group of high-risk individuals. Again, there's tons of studies to go through, but the take-home message here is that just a minimal amount, we're talking about 45 micrograms, can provide such powerful protection against two very, prominent conditions or diseases in this country and abroad even, and that's osteoporosis and cardiovascular disease.
So what does some of the research look like as far as the reducing the cardiovascular risk and reducing calcifications? And do they have any idea of what some of the mechanisms of action are of vitamin K2 and its ability to reduce that?
Yeah, actually, before when we mentioned how vitamin K2 improves bone density by activating this osteocalcin protein, in the case of the cardiovascular system, vitamin K2 activates a protein called matrix GLA protein or matrix GLA protein. This particular protein actually has the ability to inhibit calcium from depositing in the vessel walls. Particularly, the studies that they looked at were in the aorta, which is the main artery, the largest blood vessel coming out of the heart, or actually probably the largest blood vessel in the body, that actually the heart pumps blood out of the aorta to the entire body. And studies show that vitamin K2 actually inhibits calcification of the aorta and other blood vessels that supply the heart and the rest of the body. So the vitamin K deficiency or vitamin K2 deficiency can result in a reduction in the activity of this matrix GLA protein, and in so doing, impairs the normal functioning of the removal process of calcium from the arteries. So basically, it's not keeping arteries calcium out of the arteries and in the bones. It's allowing calcium to stay in the bones, and that therefore lead to, in combination with things that, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with, Dr. Becerra, and some of your readers are familiar with, and that's things like oxidation of LDL cholesterol.
Right.
So the combination of those things will definitely put you in an increased risk for cardiovascular disease. So it's mainly the mechanism within the artery itself, and it has to do with the activation of this protein that helps clear or basically keep calcium out of the arteries, okay, and mostly in the bones where it belongs. And if you look at study basic anatomy, 99% of calcium is found in the bones. Mm-hmm. Only 1% is found outside the bone, or what we call the extracellular bone matrix, or within the blood. Only about 1% of your entire body calcium is maintained in the blood. So we want to keep calcium to a minimum in the blood, and we want to keep most of it in the bones themselves and out of the arteries, and that's what vitamin K2 seems to be very effective at doing.
Yeah, I know, you know, vitamin K does naturally occur in several different places in the body, and one of the higher concentrations when you actually look at where it occurs is in the artery walls. So as a natural process, our body tends to concentrate vitamin K into the artery walls, probably to keep production of this protein up to prevent the calcification of those arteries. You know, we have seen in the last 5 years what we've seen with vitamin D. You know, we have what was set up to be the recommended daily allowance, or what was necessary to prevent a vitamin D deficiency. And what we've learned now is that level, what we used to think was okay to just prevent a deficiency, was not enough to support optimal health. And that's why everybody out there has been hearing that they need to get their vitamin D levels checked, have been hearing that they need to take more vitamin D. It is just a huge thing across the board. Everybody's recommending it. And I think the same thing is going to happen with vitamin K. What we're realizing is, as Americans, as a society, we're consuming enough vitamin K to prevent a vitamin K deficiency, mm-hmm. but we're not consuming enough vitamin K that is necessary for the body to sustain optimal health. And this is where we get into looking at what's going on with our food supply and why aren't we getting enough vitamin K, and same reason why oftentimes we're not getting enough vitamin D anymore. But what do we do about it? Oftentimes the best solution is to find a good, safe dose of supplementation to give those nutrients to the body. We're learning a lot about these fat-soluble vitamins, and that is a lot of great, exciting research about MK7. I know there is some good, exciting research about the other vitamin K, MK4, out there as well. So, you know, each person may be a better candidate for one or the other, but either way, we know that this vitamin is extremely important, not just for bone health, but it is just so fascinating, you know, how when you look at the body as a synergistic whole, you get this effect of depositing calcium in the bone, and lo and behold, this nutrient is also highly responsible for reducing calcium deposition in the arteries. I mean, how could you ask for a better additional benefit of a vitamin, you know, besides that? So I think some really, really exciting stuff. So we're going to have to take a quick break, Brian and all the listeners. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the discussion about vitamin K, and we're going to spend a few minutes talking about resveratrol, which is a very exciting nutrient in the press these days. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Hello and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. We are here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. I am Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for this hour, and I am so excited to be here sharing this information with you. Next week, my co-host Dana Lake returns, and she'll be covering chronic fatigue syndrome with the famous Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum will be her special guest. It should be an absolutely great show. Today, we have covered a lot of topics. We've talked about a lot of really great things regarding osteoporosis and bone density, fracture risk, and we just spent the last couple segments talking about vitamin K2 and its exciting new role in helping to prevent fractures and actually reduce cardiovascular risk. So if you missed the show, you're just tuning in, definitely log on to myvillagegreen.com and download the archive shows and listen to the show in its entirety. In this last segment, we're going to spend a couple minutes talking about a very new or another very exciting nutrient called resveratrol. So I have Brian Tanzer on the phone with me today as my special guest. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hi, Dr. Pizarro. How are you?
Great. So we only have, you know, we don't have a ton of time, but why don't you tell the guests, I think a lot of people have heard about resveratrol. It's everywhere. Right. There's tons of news about it. Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
Let people understand. I mean, you know, what is it? Is it just in wine? Where does it come from? How do we get it? You know, how much do we take? Is it really good for us? The whole deal.
Yeah, this has become a little bit of a controversial area, but basically resveratrol falls in the category of polyphenols. There are many polyphenols that are in fruits and vegetables. It's found in high concentrations in the skins of red grapes. Therefore, you're going to find it more in red wine, which uses the grape skins to process, as opposed to white wine that doesn't. It's also found in other dark berries and a little bit in peanuts as well. One of the major benefits of resveratrol, or I should say biological effects, is that it is a powerful antioxidant. It helps reduce the oxidation of bad cholesterol in the arteries, which can trigger the atherosclerotic or hardening of or process of hardening of the arteries. Basically, resveratrol is produced by the plant to protect it from environmental factors such as bacteria, fungi, ultraviolet light, and many other environmental factors. A researcher at Harvard Medical School, Dr. David Sinclair, started a company called Sertris a few years back, looking at compounds that are similar to resveratrol that are able to activate a family of proteins or genes that have to do with lifespan or aging.
Mm-hmm.
When he found out that resveratrol was one of them, he was kind of taken back because he didn't really know what it was until he started Googling it and found out that resveratrol is in red wine.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a shock to him. But basically, there really aren't any good human studies at the current time. There was a study published back in 2006 that showed that high doses of resveratrol in rats, when used in conjunction with a very high calorie, very high fat diet, actually increased the survival rate. So basically, it negated the effects of that high-fat, high-calorie diet.
Right,
I want your listeners to go home with it, take home the message that they can eat what they want, do what they want, pop a pill of resveratrol, and all will be well. That's not what I'm trying to say here. But it does show the power of this compound. And some, of course, these results are preliminary, and more research is ongoing. And the fact that a pharmaceutical company, GlaxoSmithKline, purchased the company started by Dr. Sinclair called Sertris for a very large sum of money shows that there is a lot of promise in this area. And right now they're working on human studies in type 2 diabetes because these compounds, resveratrol, seems to be able to help reduce insulin resistance, which is the hallmark of type 2 diabetes, and lower blood glucose levels as well. And one of the main things that it does is that it mimics the effects of a low-calorie diet.
Right. So we've known for a while that one of the ways to increase lifespan is to go through calorie restriction.
Exactly. And there's a lot of animal studies that show that giving animals very low-calorie diets increases their lifespan probably up to 20 to 30%. But in that study, they only published the results of the high-dose resveratrol group.
Right. So that was the interesting thing. I mean, that study, Scott, you know, just basically shot resveratrol to the top of every headline that you could see a couple years ago. But I think what people didn't understand is that the results of that study weren't attainable, or the model of that study wasn't really attainable in humans taking resveratrol supplements.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't take the results of animal studies and actually, put it towards humans. You have to do human clinical studies, which are presently ongoing. But this compound is very promising, and I can tell you from being in the industry and studying nutrition as a former college professor, I've seen a lot of supplements come and go. This supplement's going to be with us for a long time to come because with the help, and I put that in quotation marks, of the pharmaceutical industry funding a lot of research in this area, we're going to see a lot of positive effects of this compound. So it's really exciting.
That's great. So let's talk about some of the other, you know, there's been some other preliminary stuff coming out showing that other more attainable doses, like through supplementation, might also be effective. You know, we know we can't you know, I think you we had said it was almost like 1,000 bottles of wine is what you would have to drink to equal what the animals were getting in that study. And, you know, the amount of supplements you would have to take would be totally cost prohibitive and ridiculous to get what the rats were getting in that study. But, you know, what are we finding out about lower doses or things that, you know, is taking a supplement worth it for a human?
Right. Well, there was a study done in 2008 by Dr. Richard Weinrich at the University of Wisconsin, who's been studying the effects of low-calorie diets on monkeys, decided to use resveratrol in addition to the low-calorie diet. And he found out the lower dosage, which came to the, which would be a human equivalent dose of about 350 milligrams a day, which isn't the thousands of milligrams that were mentioned before, did show some of the positive effects protecting or reducing the aging of the cardiovascular system, lowering blood sugar, helping with insulin resistance. So they did show some very positive effects using low dosages. And again, this is a very gray area as far as human dosing.
Right.
And we're just going to have to wait and see. And we're going to have to wait and see what the results are over the next couple of years of these human studies.
Right. So we are seeing some potential benefits of having taking lower doses.
And I don't want to come out and just come out with a recommendation, but I think a safe, reasonable recommendation would be between 100 and 300 milligrams a day, I think would provide adequate benefit.
Great. And so, you know, you've been talking, we know that, you know, you do work with Reliance, supplement company, and they have been producing a product that you can find at the Village Green under our Pathway brand that basically is a vitamin K2 supplement and a new resveratrol supplement. Is that correct?
Yeah, the vitamin K2 is at the dosage. When we come up with products, our products, we like for them to reflect what's in the research.
Right.
So our product is a 45 microgram per day K2 dosage, and the resveratrol is a 100 milligram capsule, and it also has the Leukoselect trademark brand grapeseed extract, just for some extra synergistic antioxidant benefits.
Excellent. Excellent, Brian. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate you sharing all that great information with the listeners.
Well, thank you for having me. I look forward to coming on the show again.
All right. Sounds great, Brian. Take care.
Take care, doctor.
All right. Well, I was just having a lot of fun. I hope you guys all understood and learned some good information about vitamin K2 and resveratrol. You know, it's interesting. Everybody's been talking about the French paradox, this issue of, you know, the French can drink tons of red wine and eat lots of fatty foods and cheeses and butters and smoke cigarettes and not get disease like Americans. And a lot of people have thought it was related to the resveratrol. When the study came out, basically showing that, you know, the equivalent in humans would have to be drinking thousands of bottles of red wine, it didn't quite make as much sense. So you really got to look at the whole picture. You also have to consider that the French, you know, have a much, they maybe work 30 hours a week versus our 40 hours a week. They have a lot more vacation time than we have. They tend to have a much lower stress level in general. So there are all these other factors that are involved. Although the resveratrol seems to be an exciting nutrient out there, you know, it may not be the only thing in red wine or the only thing that is leading to that. But I definitely, it's one of the supplements that I do take personally. As Brian mentioned, there is a lot of exciting research, and I think this one is going to be around for a while. If you listen to today's show and you have any other questions, specifically about, I think if you go out and you try and find a vitamin K2 product, you may find that there's going to be some differences between the MK4 and the MK7. And Brian did present some very good research on the MK7 form of vitamin K2. I also think there's some very good research on the MK4 form of vitamin K2 as well. So if you are out there trying to look for a supplement and you have questions about it, like I said, you can feel free to email me at drpassero, drpassero @gmail.com. I'd be happy to answer any questions for you or try and help you figure out which one might be best for you. So next week, again, Dana Lake will be on with Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum talking about chronic fatigue. I will be back in a couple weeks. This has been The Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. And don't forget, if you have any other questions, email me or stop in the Village Green on West Cedar Lane. All right, everybody, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.